Hi, I'm Michael Parkinson, and just for inquiring about further episodes of the Failing Writers podcast, you'll receive this free pen. What's that? We've run out of pens.
Oh.
Welcome, everybody, to another thrilling episode of the Failing Writers podcast, and it is thrilling today, isn't it?
Ooh, it is.
It's a kind of a special edition. We're pushing back the boundaries of interviewing techniques, yep. Really, and we've tried something quite quite special, really, unheard of, where what we've done is literally not recorded the first 30 minutes of quite an interesting interview.
Yeah.
Partly through incompetence.
I don't know. I think it does make... No one's ever done this before, Tom. We're, like you said, it's pushing the boundaries.
No, it's very experimental.
I think we should, you know, other people should do this.
I like to imagine that maybe like Terry Wogan or Michael Parkinson could have done this. Just live on TV. Just sat there with their arms folded for the first sort of 20, 30 minutes.
And just
gone, well, it's one of those techniques. It's one of those techniques, isn't it, where you, a lot of writers just bin like the first few chapters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's effectively what we've done with this interview.
So, yeah, anyway, we're interviewing Adrian Poynton, who's a comedy writer for TV. And, well, we started off talking to him about how he kind of started off, didn't we? So we should fill in some of the gaps that kind of... This is the downside of deleting the first 30 minutes.
There's no other way that people will know, is there?
So quite a lot of information we've missed out.
And some of this might be wrong as well, because we might have misremembered it.
we could have done, couldn't we?
Interview by Chinese whispers.
Well, I think we'll get it. We'll get it pretty much spot on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he started off as a florist doing interpretive dance, using only flowers as his medium. Was that
something
right?
Something like that,
pretty
yeah.
Sure that was right.
I don't know if it was that, actually, thinking about it now. I think he might have written a play for the Edinburgh
Festival.
Oh, that's
it, yes.
That sounds more
about
likely.
About Graham Chapman.
Didn't he have the idea in a lift?
An escalator, I think, wasn't he? He was going up.
It was an escalator.
He was going up. He was going up, wasn't he?
Literally and metaphorically.
Yeah. He was going up in the world.
Wrote a play.
And took it to the Edinburgh Festival.
Yep.
I believe got sort of good reviews.
Good
got
reviews.
Spotted.
People. It won an award. It won an award, Tom. It was an award-winning play.
It did. Fringe first.
Got him some kudos and attention. Did he tour the play afterwards? Yep. Or it was on in London or something?
Either the West End or off the West End.
I think it blew up a bit.
Near the West End.
And then he went on to write TV comedy White Van Man, which was about 2012.
And during this period, was he also doing stand up? He was doing some stand up as well. Or maybe he did that
a
bit before.
Yes, I think that's how he was initially earning a crust as well.
Yeah.
So I think. There we go. Half an hour. That was that. 3 minutes.
And he was just starting to talk about the difference between writers' rooms. That's it, because White Van Man was then sold to America, and he was just starting to talk about the difference between writers' rooms in America and the UK.
That should segue in perfectly.
Yes.
I think so.
So, Adrian, why don't we just randomly, let's just pick a topic to talk about. What about writer's rooms? Have you ever worked...
Imagine that we've been talking for maybe half an hour.
are we just pretending none of that ever happened? That's my
job. Imagine we've been talking for maybe half an hour.
Yeah, and where we'd have got to about that
And
point.
The point where we would have got to is talking about writer's rooms in the UK and then... In the US, maybe, if you got the opportunity to work.
Sure, I mean, yeah. If I'd been talking for half an hour, then we found we lost that.
Yeah, just trying to get into that headspace if we can.
I'm lucky. I've worked in writers' rooms in Britain and in the US. So I was after I came off White Van Man, I got offered a job on Trolleyed on Sky One, and they did this series. That was writer's room run, which was quite unusual at that time for the UK. Most shows weren't. There's a lot of kids TV stuff that was written writer's room wise. So I'd done a bit of that, but this was one of the first ones that was properly doing it. And what's weird about it is the writer's room only exists in America because they write so many episodes. I think we forget that in the UK.
We
just write ourselves. It's six episodes. One person could do that. So you get good, solid kind of, you know, consistency. But it only really ever started happening because they were writing 24 episodes a series. So they needed that group of writers not to burn each other out. And they all started throwing the ball around in a room. So we often look at America going, oh, wow, the writer's room system. And you kind of go, yeah, no, it's not necessarily better. That was necessity. But now they've dropped to like 10 episode orders, even sixes out there. They still run the writer's room because they've now lost confidence that one human being could ever do all of it. This is a very strange balance.
Yeah.
So we did Trolleyed, and the way that worked, there was about, what, 7-8 of us in a cold church loft in Soho, huddled around our coffee cups, just kind of working out what the series arc would be and then dividing episodes out. So what, there was a guy who, I guess we'd class as a, not script editor, that's a different job, a script developer, I don't know what you'd call him, and he was kind of running the writer's scripty McScriptersons. And he was sort of guiding the room, and we'd all sit around every day, and it would just be, you know, there's six of us, seven of us in the room, and your man, so eight of us in there. He wasn't a writer, and we would come up with ideas. One of us would usually have a laptop open, typing down what was said. In case anybody forgot it. Whereas in America, there would be a team of script assistants on a laptop at the back all doing that. So you'd just be sat talking. You wouldn't have to have one of us doing it because they've got money.
So was that like a hyper-competitive environment in the UK? Was there a difference between...
In the UK, I think the difference between the two is exactly that. I think that the rooms in the UK... that I've been in, they seem to be firstly filled with what I would class as more true writers. That sounds really offensive, but they're people who had often written their own individual things and didn't need to be in a room because they weren't just joke people. There'd be people who were good at jokes and people who were good at like story, but they'd all be more all-rounders. There were, you know, and a couple of people who'd written their own shows and things like that as well. But if you'd given them their own show, they could all sort of handle it. I think my experience in America is it's very easy to hide in a writer's room in America and just be, oh, that's the joke guy. He sits in the corner and says two sentences a day and they're really great, but they're just jokes, you know?
Yeah.
So how did you actually end up going to America then? What was the process?
I was quite lucky in that White Van Man, the series I did for BBC Three, got bought by a company called the Mark Gordon Company in America. And they wanted to try and do a remake out there. They had a deal with ABC Television, and they bought the project for them to try and do it. And I was writing series two of the UK show and had just committed to Trolleyed. So they applied an American writer to write the main body of the script, and I would sort of I'd look over it and give overview and be a co-creator on it. Which is good because I didn't know the American market at all at that point in time. And, you know, you think you do, but you don't know how to make American television. They do it very differently. It's just a very different country, and their tone of comedy is slightly different, I realise now.
Yeah.
It's a lot broader. And the difference between American comedy and British comedy, to sort of sidetrack a little bit, and this has been said so much, but it's worth saying again, is that we're kind of victims over here, and we like to be victims. And in America, they're funny guys. Because we as a country, they as a country particularly, are successful in their eyes. America's all about success. So if you look at any character that's successful, that in a successful American TV comedy particularly, and they make jokes. Okay, if you look at the cast of Friends, every single one of those, if a laugh happens in the TV show Friends, it's because one of them usually has made a joke.
Yeah.
Whereas in Britain... It's because our trousers are falling.
Yeah, or Delboy's fallen through a
counter. Or Delboy's fallen through the bar is the classic example. The only person in the cast of Friends that would fall through that bar is Ross. He's the only one. And it's such a small difference that they're successful people filled with hope, whereas over here we're not. And actually the writers' rooms, they're very competitive in America. And people don't just sit down at the table and go, right, let's all work together to make the best TV show. They all sit down and go, right, I'm the best, sit down and listen to me. And it just becomes this ladder of people crawling over each other trying to get to the top.
So how did it actually develop with you actually moving over to America then? Because you're saying you were just like a script.
Yeah, so I was a script consultant on it, and then I went over and got myself an American agent because I realised that there was a point in time, especially when the pilot was commissioned, that I thought, oh, what's happening here is usually as a writer or as anyone, you're stood outside a door banging on it going, hello, can I come in? And I suddenly went, oh, hang on, they're making a pilot of a show that I created. So everybody else's agents are in town banging on the door trying to get them a writing job on it. So I can now go to America. Yeah. There's about a period of a month where I can turn up and go, hi, I'm the guy that did the thing. Do you want to sign me? You know, because it was the only, there was a window there where people knew my name because I'd done a thing that was going to get their writers. They'd already got work. So I rather sensibly got on a plane, went and got an agent out there. And then I thought, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back when they're filming the pilot and I'm going to hang around like a bad smell. Because for no other reason than I just love television more than anything. It's my favourite thing in the world. And I thought, I just want to be on a set in America where someone's making television. I'll probably never get that opportunity ever again. I want to see how they do it. I want to go to LA and I want to sit there. And the fact that it's something I kind of co-created and have a lot of jokes in and sort of co-wrote this one, I get to sit there just giggling my tits off about this. So I went there and I turned up to set. I was just a bit of a giddy child. But I sort of forgot that there was a possibility of work or anything like that, or it should be impressing because I was just a giddy child. But what that actually came across as was confidence. Ah. And Americans really respond to confidence.
Yeah.
So I'd be sat at like the TV at the big like Video Village monitors and happily just, you know, giving everyone shit because I was having a laugh with everyone, just having fun like I would. And then I went back to my hotel one night and went, you really need to work out who some of these people are because you don't know what you're saying to anyone, mate. What are you doing? And then it turned out actually that I just managed to make a good impression on the right people. And luckily, by the time I got back to the UK, I got a phone call from my agent saying ABC want to sign you on a development deal. They think you're a great writer and your shows are great. So maybe you'd like to write some more with them.
That must have been a nice phone call.
It was ludicrous because I've never had a plan. I'm not someone who's gone and then I want to do this and then I want to do this. And so, yeah, so I was like, great, I'll do that. And then the show got commissioned to series. I will say now 100% because of who they cast in it as opposed to it being good. It was a good show. It's a good pilot. But when you've got Leah Remini, who'd done 9 years on King of Queens, and J.K. Simmons, who, you know, ended up winning an Oscar a couple of years after it for Whiplash and is J. Jonah Jameson in Spider-Man. You know, you get noticed. so we got commissioned series, and one of the producers had sort of said to me, if we get this as a series, would you want to come out here and work on this? And I'd gone, oh yeah, of course I would. Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Not really thinking it was actually a job offer. And then it went to series and I got a phone call coming saying, do you want to, right, you've got a development deal. You could do that in Britain if you want to. But if you want to, why don't you come and work in the writer's room in America 3 days a week and then go off to your office and develop other stuff during the rest of the time? And I thought, God, I can't not do that.
Yeah.
And luckily, my wife had been in the job she was in for like 9 years and was ready for a change. And I just said, I think we should, do you want to do this?
Yeah.
Should we go and just go to California for a bit and see if it's fun? And we honestly went out not knowing if we were going to go for 6 months or 6 years or what.
But how exciting. Strangely, I remember thinking that it was the most exciting thing I'd ever heard of at the time.
Sure.
Your wife was working, Becky was working at KISS in London.
She was.
And I used to do some scripts for her. And I remember, I must have seen a social media post that she said about it or something when she was leaving, and I remember thinking that just sounds like the most exciting thing in the entire world. Like
that was pretty much our opinion.
Written the series and you're off to America to make it. That was just, I was insanely jealous. I remember
it was so ludicrous to me that like somebody had said, do you want to come and do this? We'll pay for your flights. We'll pay for your wife's flight as well. Because they were Disney, so they've got so much money. They were saying things like, and we'll give you this amount of money to find somewhere to live. I was like, what? You know, when you're used to just like working in Britain, where even if you're like a really well paid writer, you still feel like when they go, oh yeah, that's okay. They've agreed, like your agent will come back and finally go, yeah, the lawyers have agreed the fee on that one. You still get the sense that they've gone, all right, but we're going down the back of the sofa for extra pounds on that. Come on. That's not a lot of money. Whereas America,
put sandwiches in the room, but there'll just be cheese.
Oh, wait, yeah, exactly. Do not ask for ham. You know what happened when you asked for ham. But America, because ABC's owned by Disney, so they were just doing anything to get me to go out there, it felt like. Whereas I was sort of whispering to my agent at the time, you know we're going, right? You know we're not. Why are they still throwing stuff? And he'd be like, that, shut up. Shut up. Stop being a human about it. This is not the way America works. They're throwing things at us.
Rearrange these words into the name of your favouritest podcast. Failing the Writers. Yeah, that's right. You're listening to Writers Failing the Podcast.
So you said there was a difference, a definite difference between the ethos in the writer's room and the atmosphere there. What was the rest of life like outside of writing, just in terms of being over there, culture-wise?
Well, we call it our champagne years because we were having a riot. The thing with America is it's a really interesting and exciting country, and it's got, you know, every environment you could possibly go and want to see. There's mountains, there's snow, there's the desert, there's everything, and they're all, honestly, when you're in LA, you can drive, if you drive an hour in any direction, you can pick whatever climate you like, unless you go left and then you get very wet. But the thing with LA, particularly as a town, that when you first get there seems the greatest thing in the world, but the longer you spend there actually becomes a negative, is that everybody in that town is in that industry. Yeah. So everyone's a writer, everyone's a director, everyone's an actor, everyone's, you know, everything. And it's usually one of those three because they're the big sexy jobs that people want. And then producers and agents.
Yeah.
So every party you go to, even if it's just a mate's barbecue in their back garden, all you talk about is work. And all you get is that weird anxiety inside yourself when other people are going, yeah, I just sold this project. And you're like, I didn't sell a project this week. Does that mean I'm bad? No, it doesn't. You're on a thing. You're on a show. It's fine. Or you know.
Am I still allowed a burger?
Yeah, exactly. And you can always feel other people kind of fronting up and not really necessarily being honest about. You get to a point where you just want someone to turn up to a bar and just go, and you go, how was your day? And they go, absolutely terrible. I've had my agent can't get me any work. I'm falling down the tree. This is awful. Just nothing's happening for me. It's horrible at the moment. And you just wrap your arms around them and go, yes,
which,
thank
to be
you.
Fair, in England is exactly what would happen. Everyone just complaining about how shit things are.
Even if you were having a mega successful time of it, that would be your conversation, wouldn't it?
But the thing with America is, 98% of people in that town in LA are doing exactly that. They're not getting scripts sold. They're not, because it's still, like in Britain, goes to a very small amount of people, but they're not honest because their country's all about, you know, being the best and you can grow up to be president. So they all pretend it's going great because you don't want to be the only one in town.
Does it feel
failing?
Like a bit of a game in that sense that everybody's playing?
It's more of a game than it is anything else. It's all about representing who. You want people to think you are and the work you think you're getting, because then people in rooms will go, oh, well, he said he's doing this, so we should do this with him, as opposed to actually in, it's always going to be that in the industry, full stop. But I think in Britain, you know, if you write it and it's really good, they will find it in the end. And you know, that they like just good scripts. It's not about, oh, but they're not anybody. They haven't written three other scripts that have been good. Well, no, of course they haven't. You have to find, at some point, there has to be the first script that they get made. And Britain's better at that. America's bad at that and very bad at pigeonholing people as well. So I went over there with a comedy, and a certain type of comedy, quite a mainstream comedy that was on a very mainstream ITV-esque channel.
Yeah.
So then that was what I wrote.
Yeah.
That was who I was. You know, I would give in other ideas and that would be like a HBO-style idea, and my agents would get a bit, oh, but no, but they don't want this from
you. That's not
you. Like, yeah, but that's what I'm inspired to write at the moment.
How did it all end for you then, the American adventure? Was it an abrupt end, or was it kind of a slow moving back? Or?
Yeah, it felt slow. So I did Family Tools, which was the remake of White Van Man, for the year it was on, the 13 episodes we did, and did my development deal with that. Got a script commissioned on that, wrote the script. Wasn't sure I liked ABC, and we weren't connecting in the right way, and I didn't think they were necessarily right for me. So my agent got me a development deal over at CBS. So I moved to CBS and did development stuff there and sort of was writing scripts and selling ideas. Didn't feel I was getting close to getting stuff actually made, getting a camera put in front of it, because it's so competitive and they do like to give it to people they've had success with before. And that's, you know, understandable. There's a lot of money involved.
Yeah.
And I then was also, so I was developing my own stuff and working with new writers to try and develop their ideas and turn them into things with regard for me to be the showrunner on their shows. And I got to a point where I realised two things. I realised I think I'm going to get stuck in the cycle of development only here. And they're going to pay me very, very well and we're going to have a very nice life in California, but I want to make television. And I think I will be able to say I'm a writer, but I don't know if I'm going to necessarily get people made. And then it's going to, like, I'm just going to become a grumpy man helping other people get shows made rather than putting faith back into myself. And that's fine, and that's good, and it's still better than a real job, but it wasn't quite what I wanted. And I was missing Britain. There's a tone to the British sensibility that I think I very much write within. That we've been out there 6.5 years, and I was still getting development work. I didn't really want to write in a writer's room again. There's a lot of long hours, and it's quite an aggressive environment that I just thought I'd rather be sat at home writing what I want to write. And then... we were missing our families, and more importantly, we'd always sort of said that if it did go well out there, if I was just being a development guy and they were saying, come in and pitch shows and we'll buy them off you, I could do that from anywhere. So I would come home, do that, go over there twice a year, sell some shows, come back, write it all here. And then if it ever got made, maybe consider going back for a couple of months, come back. Because I'd hit a point as well where I didn't need to be there. So it was the conversation was not so much, should we leave Hollywood? It was more of a, should we go home and see our friends and families and be British again? Yeah, so it was a mix of the two, but they were the main points of the conversation, I think. And happily came back thinking, well, this is great. I'll go back. I'll do some American work while I remind people I'm in Britain. And then I'll get some British work going just after that. So we arrived... just as the Writers Guild of America went on strike, so I couldn't work there. And then just as that was finishing up, the pandemic hit, so I can't work here. So it's been a cracking 2 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Everyone loves a happy ending.
Well, do you know what? I still work as a writer. I've got lots of nice things in development. That sounded incredibly grumpy and bitter.
Well, that's because you're back in the UK. That's not right. That's the way it should be.
The sensibilities come back.
You'd been still in the US. You'd been like, oh, I'm writing this. I'm doing this. Got a lot of interest in this. It's all going very well.
Do you know what? I could do all that about the projects I've got here with various companies. But what's the point? Yeah. Who knows what's going to happen with them? I've got stuff in development. It's lovely. I'm making money. I'm very happy. I'm writing. I'd like to turn the camera back on again. thanks, COVID.
You're listening to the Flailing Writhers podcast.
Adrian, imagine a world where we had a conversation previously that someone may or may not have recorded. And you mentioned about...
Hang on. I'm going to take me a moment. Yeah. No, that's... Yeah, I can do that quite easily.
Can you get in that place? Yeah. I think we all can. And you mentioned about kind of your first job, if you like, was doing stand-up comedy. What kind of stand-up comedian were you? What was your thing? What was your style? What was your...
I think I was...
As people like to say, if you say you're a stand-up comedian, to think, oh, God, tell us a joke and make us laugh. Can you?
Yeah. I think that I was a writer in disguise as a stand-up, and I didn't know it for a long time. I liked being on stage. I was very at ease performing.
Yeah.
But I think that I was telling nice, long-winded, interweaving stories as opposed to just talking about my penis or something I think there's been a bit of a sea change in comedy since maybe I was doing it. But, you know, Liverpool on a Friday night didn't want what I was shoveling as much as they don't want what most people are giving, to be honest with you.
From this podcast, one thing I've learned, if we ever become stand-up comedians, is don't go to Liverpool.
Yeah, it really? Seems to be a theme, doesn't it? Yeah.
Has that been mentioned before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you know what? They're a great town. They just... They're a funny town themselves and think they should be on stage as well. That's the difference. So it's a fight.
Yeah,
it's a fight. But I was always I was always happier writing my material than I was performing it necessarily.
Right.
And the things that I got known at and would get the most of my work as was I was very loose with the audience and very, that sounds like I slept with a lot of them. That's not what I meant. I was very chatty yes. with the audience and, you know, trying to pick up on little bits about them and sort of do it. So I'd get booked as a compere quite a lot. Which, you know, in many ways is a bit like writing because you're just picking up a piece of information and running with it and creating stories about it. So I was sort of, my brain was, that muscle was functioning correctly for what I should have been doing the whole time. But the brilliant thing about that was because I would compare a lot and like warm up audiences and then bring on other comedians, I ended up getting booked a lot as a studio warm up for multicam TV shows, which, you know, absolute dream come true for me, that, because not only did I just want to be in the audience of those shows anyway, watching TV get made of brilliant comedies and bad ones sometimes as well, but just it was amazing. I also then would go to dress rehearsals to see the show before I then had to introduce it and stuff, so I knew what was going on with it. And I'd just sit in the audience and I could sit there and work out what everyone's job in production sort of was. I'd go, that's the floor manager. Oh, wait a minute, a floor manager is the same job as a first AD in film. It's just got a different name here. And you could see the way everything sort of worked. So it was dreamy. It was great.
Wow. So do you feel that you've got any sort of like unfinished business in the States, or is that sort of chapter closed and on with something fresh?
I feel at the moment I really want to get another couple of shows or just one show away here and sort of get my feet firmly back on the ground in Britain. Because like I said, I haven't had a chance to do much work here because of, you know, pandemics and stuff like that. So I'd really like to just do a British show and remind myself what I love about British TV and go, yeah, there we are, that's TV. I've written a few scripts for companies whilst being here, so I've had a bit of that and it's been great. So I'm very much into British TV, which is, you know, more and more international anyway, because with streaming services, so your Netflix and your, you know, all of that malarkey, Amazon and stuff like that, there's just an ability to, you used to have to sell a show here and then they'd remake it with different actors in America, whereas now actually you can just make the best version of the show here. If it's expensive, you get a bit of money from America for them to screen it as well in a co-production, and you really can plant your feet in one country and sell it all around the world. And I also think we're making some of the best TV in the world at the moment. There's been periods when we haven't, and we haven't been able to compete, but I think at the moment, when you look at some of the stuff we're putting out there, we're doing really good things.
Well, fingers crossed for some of the stuff that you've got in development at the moment. Is there like one sort of big thing that you think this is going to be the next big thing for me?
I think that, do you know what, there's two, and one of them got turned down 3 weeks ago by everyone.
Yeah.
But that's the job.
Yeah.
Honestly, and the half the thing to say to anybody who wants to be a writer is, well, congratulations, you're about to get a lot of rejection, but that's the thing, that it doesn't matter because when you've got a good, I know with this project that got turned down, I think it's so good. I really think it will go out with it in 2 years again, and someone will make it. And if they don't do it, then we'll go out with it again in like another two, and it'll get made. So that one I'm confident with. And then another idea I'm just working up at the moment, I'm so excited by, that if somebody said what would you like to do, those would be my two projects. I've got like, what have I got, 7-8 projects with different companies at the moment, and they're all great. And if anybody asks if they've listened to this podcast, I'll say the one I'm speaking about now is definitely that one that I'm working on with them.
Are some of those actually written, or are they all just treatments, or
so a lot of those are at kind of pitch stage, where the way it was, it might be quite interesting to just sort of talk through the way often pitching works here, because maybe people don't know actually that much. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Is often you go in, you have a meeting, and you'll pitch an idea to a company, and they'll go, oh yeah, that's great, can you go and work that up a little bit? And you will try and work with them on a kind of pitch document, which is maybe 5-8 pages of sort of a bit about what the show's about, who the characters are, maybe a couple of story ideas, and then a bit of a wrap-up about why the show should be made, maybe what the tone of it is. And then that gets sent to commissioners, and then they go through it, and hopefully, you know, at that point you've sold it to a production company, so the, you know, your deal's already been done, so you know what you would get if you were writing it, so you can't argue with them about that at that point. And if they like it, feel it's something that they want to put on the channel, maybe they'll come back and go, okay, great. Maybe they'll want a meeting with you about it. Often they'll come back and go, right, write the first script. And you'll write the first script. If they like that, maybe they'll make a pilot. Maybe they'll ask for another script or two. And sometimes they'll just come back and go, great, go and write a series if you're a bit more known as a writer. Yeah. So with projects I've got around the place, I'd say the majority of them have just been either gone out at pitch, doc and stage. The one that just got turned down was bought by a TV channel and then turned down at script stage. And then the one I'm about to go out with soon, I've just written up the pitch doc, but it's quite a complicated show. It's an hour-long kind of comedy drama type thing, but it's the plot's quite complicated. So I've written like a 12-page kind of Bible of this kind of is what it is, and this is basically the story. And I think actually you just have to do the work sometimes with things like that and do what you need to do to really sell the show, because they get so many, there are so many production companies pitching things. Yeah. They get so many pitches. You've got to make it bulletproof. You've got to challenge them to not mention it.
You know? It sounds like it can bomb at any point as well.
Oh, it's a tightrope walk. Yeah. The whole thing is a tightrope walk. You have to get to a point with TV and being a scriptwriter and TV where you think, like that last project with mine, I said, you have to really think to yourself, and sometimes it sounds arrogant, but it's not. You just have to think, okay, it wasn't for them now. Or I think it's important that every time you go out with a script or a project, that you've put so much work into it and done so much beyond what they've paid you for it, that when they turn it down, you get to go, well, they're wrong. And really believe that.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than going out with a project and sort of them turning it down and you going, yeah, no, I can see why you did that. Yeah, it was all right. There was some good stuff in it, but I could have done better.
It sounds like you're a very resilient person.
You've got to be.
You don't spend many nights crying into your pillow.
Honestly, no, but that's because, no, not about this. I've been around it as a job so long that I'm aware of a few things. And the main things are, one, it's a very silly job because I'm doing something I love. In a way that occasionally when I get paid, I get paid very nicely for it. And it seems silly to me that anybody would ever pay money for something that's this much fun, that I love doing this much. But at the same time, I know that it's hard. And there are many people that want to do the job that I get to do occasionally and a lot of time don't get to do. And they're snapping at my heels and I'm snapping at their heels. And there's only, you know, X amount of spaces to put things on TV. And there's a lot more writers and a lot more projects. You know, it's not just like one writer gets a project each per year. You know, we've all got a lot out there. So you think about that. You're like, God, it's really competitive. But you just have to overcome that and think, yeah, but is it worth it? And I just love being a writer. Writing's great. Yeah. It's loads of fun.
It helps. It helps to love the process.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You really have to say to yourself, am I prepared for a lot of no's and a lot of pain? I've had stuff made. I've worked in America. That's like part of the dream. And I still get to sit here going, oh, that was a rough week. Oh, that hurt that week, this week. And, you know, I've done good work. I get meetings with people. You know, there's people who can't even get meetings because they're new and people don't know who they are. And it's competitive out there. But the pain that you feel at any level, you do at all levels, I think.
I'm loath to ask this, but is there any particular, like, stab in the heart that you remember that, you know, was there anything that just really hurt? Like something you really believed in and it came crashing down. We're big on failure on this podcast, so we like to talk about
it. There was a project I did in America that just felt like it was bulletproof. I got, I'll say it was a TV project, and I got Will Arnett, actor who was in Arrested Development and voiced Batman. He was a producer and was going to be in it. And it was with a massive production company, and we got a couple of other big cast members, and the script was consistently to a point where it was really good, where people just weren't giving notes on it because they'd read it and go, yeah, that's really good. And it was everything that one of the networks needed at the time. And it just, we hit a point where I think we all started to think, oh my God, this is going to happen, isn't it? This is, great, this is going to happen. And you start to realize, I realize now you can never predict television at all. Everything was aligned, everything was perfect. People at the network, producers were going, this is happening, this is going to happen. And then Fox made a project that was nearly identical to us, and we got shut down within a week. We were all just sat there, not even going, oh God, that's unfortunate. We were going, how did none of us know that one was happening? It was insane. It was just, we were, we were, you could feel cameras like being hired to we were that close. And we're like, that, hang on, but they haven't got, why is that one? We've got these, this cast, we've got this guy. He's the voice of Lego Batman. What's happening? Yeah, so there's been a few like that.
It does seem to happen.
Yeah.
There is a phenomenon in Hollywood, isn't there, about that? Especially with films, where you get films coming out in pairs because similar ideas have been optioned, and then they get wind of one studio making something, and then they fast-track the other one. So often the one that's released first is the rubbish film.
Oh, yeah.
It's been released quickly and under on a small budget to sweep up as much of that money as possible.
Yeah.
So when the second film comes out, it's like, oh, that's a bit too much like that one. Nah. So that, yeah, it's
that's clearly what happened with us. They'd heard the buzz about the show, and we better make a crappy version of this pretty quick.
Just get it out quick.
So we got shut down, as opposed to just going, well, why don't we make the pilot anyway, or just put it on anyway? And then the other one only went to, it didn't even go to pilot. I think they wrote the script. No, they made the pilot and then just put it in a bin. Hang on,
bloody
hell. What's happened? I know, but that's that again. Oh. That's the job.
How close were they? Then? You know, when you said that, was it spookily close, or was it just kind of
the setting was identical, and it was a really quite obscure set. I won't say what it is in case
No,
I know you're not, but the setting was identical, and it was a really unique setting. So some of the setup and that, the basic premise, the whole show, it was one of those ones you couldn't put them on and not have someone go, well, that's the same show, isn't that, on a different channel? Even if the characters and everything inside it was different, it was the same show. But that's, you know, that's TV. It's that classic thing that when you get a great idea, like I was saying earlier, when you said, have you got an idea you're very excited by? And I was like, oh, this one. Part of you, when someone says that to you, and you have a really good idea, that your heart starts beating faster because you're panicking, thinking, I've got to get this out there to some people to get this commissioned, because I can't be the only one that's had this idea. Because sometimes ideas feel so good.
Like they don't belong to you, that you just pick them out of the ether.
Yeah, well, yes,
and someone
exactly.
else will also do that.
Well, because it's such a good idea that sometimes you're sitting around going, I mean, this is, someone's done this before, right? Haven't they? Has nobody done this before? Because this feels like, this is obvious. Yeah, isn't this so good it's obvious? And whether it is or not, maybe you're wrong. Maybe you just feel that. I'm not actually arrogantly saying this is the best project I've ever thought of, but I'm thinking, oh my God, this is it. But then you start panicking that you're trying to get it out there as quick as possible before some other idiot steals your thunder.
Yeah. It's much like Christa Berg said in the classic song Missing You, isn't it? If I say you're beautiful, someone else is going to think it too. Yeah. And Christa Berg, he can sum things up like that, can he?
Yeah, it's a great analogy, that.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite philosophers, probably.
I think, when that happens with a project like that, do you think, is it better if the other one falls on its ass, or are you hoping that actually it turns out to be really good so you can go, oh, actually, yeah, fair enough.
There's a week at the beginning when you hope that the set catches fire and all of that stuff. But then it's exactly that. You want the idea to be so good. There's nothing, you don't want to sit there going, right, well, you've made a really terrible version of that and mine was excellent. You want to sit there going, oh, thank God. All right, yeah, no, we weren't better than that. No, we weren't. That's the best version of that. Okay, everybody walk away.
And how did that one play out?
I mean, I don't know. I didn't watch the pilot. Somebody offered me the script once and said, do you want to read it? Right. And I went, no.
Too painful.
I wasn't interested. Also, because I think at that point in time, I'd tried to move my brain onto other things.
Yeah, yeah. Very wise.
It's so hard, though. You must know this. I think all writers know this, that it's very hard sometimes to just leave a project behind when it doesn't feel like it's got to a point of completion. Like, you know, I write TV mostly. And when I write a script, it's very nice. You get to the end of a script and you go, oh, I've written a script. But you don't want that. You wrote it so it would become a television series or a television film or something like that. So to not get to achieve the end, it's like, you know, when you write a book, you can be really proud that you've written a novel, but, you know, it doesn't feel like it's done until other people are able to go to a bookshop and read it, you know? Emailing it to your cousin doesn't feel the same as having it printed by somebody else.
Yeah.
There's an element of pride in that. And you know, God, if you've written a book or you've written a film or a script for TV, you should be so proud of yourself, because most people don't finish things. But it really is, there's a point where sometimes it's hard to leave them behind, because you just think, no, I'm not done with that. That I've got other episodes of that to write. I'm not done with the story of that. So the hardest thing is to fight and go, no, I've got to park that for a little bit. Even if it's not done, I've got to leave it and then get on and do other projects, because then maybe I can come back to that one when I'm massively successful off this other thing that I haven't thought of yet. But you know, that doesn't stop at any point, does it? Because the hardest thing about the job is even when you have a massive success, you know, you've got the advantage that doors are a bit more open to you and maybe people want to see what you're doing next, but you still have to think of it.
Yeah, it's
like an old computer game. You know the ones where you didn't save them, that when you died three times, you had to go back right to the beginning of the platform game and run all the way up. It's a bit like that, but maybe you get to start a bit further on because you're a bit more known. But you still have to come up with an idea. It has to be a good one. And then you've only got the expectation as well. Some of the development stuff, you're like that. I don't want to show them this yet. It's absolute shite. But, and this sounds like a horrible twee thing to say, and an also like conclusion wrap up bit of coolness to really put a button on this. But honestly, if you're a writer, I really think that the writing is the thing that must make you happy. And therefore, the ideas that you're writing have to be the ones that make you happy to write them and you're excited to write. Because really, that's what it should be. It's the pureness of actually writing it and completing the end of a book or the end of a script and that. And don't stop halfway through. Don't get distracted. Complete it. Finish the thing. Do it for yourself, if nothing else. Then, if other people buy it, if it gets turned into a TV show, gets published, anything like that, that's a really lovely bonus. And it's very easy to forget that. And I've forgotten it three sentences ago, I'm sure. But it's got to be... Because also, that's what will make it good and stand a better chance of actually... completing its journey. But as long as you're happy writing it, I think that's where it's got to be.
I think you've got to be like that, haven't you? Because what we've learned from interviewing people on this, be it TV or novels being traditionally published, there's an awful around the industry, there's an awful thing of what's cool at the moment, what sort of things agents and producers are looking for. It's quite a narrow and if you go chasing that, by the time you get there, you've missed the mark. So you've got to do what you believe in and hope that that's the kind of thing they're going to be looking at.
Yeah, and TV's the worst of that, because it'll take a year to 2 years to get the thing made anyway, so you've missed that thing if you're chasing that. But it happens all the time, like Modern Family's successful, so then there's, you know, 20 other family shows, and you're like, well, hang on, that one's there. Yeah. Why are we trying to do that? Why are we not looking for the exact opposite or something new and exciting? It's something that you'll always have to overcome, and especially with things like streaming, where Netflix are just sat in an office all day reading an algorithm that tells you what people are watching. There's an amazing story about that. Orange is the New Black came about because Netflix looked at their algorithm in the early days, and they saw that people were enjoying prison shows a lot and Weeds. So the TV show Weeds and things about prisons and crime. So they got the writer of Weeds to create a TV show set in a prison.
Yeah. I would love for that algorithm to go completely wrong and just mix two things that shouldn't be mixed.
I don't know if you've seen Bridgerton. I feel that's happened.
Well, do you know what? That seems like, other than... There's probably about a half hour of other details we could talk about, but maybe we should...
Adrian, thank you very much for your time. Even the stuff we didn't bother recording, that still took your valuable time.
I
do appreciate it.
Genuinely enjoyed it, even the bit people will never hear about.
Well, thanks very much, Adrian, and enjoy the rest of your life.
That's it. That's it for us, is it? We're done. Forever.
Very final ending, isn't it?
No more conversations ever. Wow.
No, that's it. That's just...
Yeah, I was going to say stay in touch, but apparently Dave doesn't want to stay in touch. So.
Somebody bought a portcullis down on that, didn't they? I genuinely enjoyed that. All right, thanks very much, and bye.
That's thanks, mate.
Do this now. Hope to see you soon. Bye.
Try to remember to press stop, Tom.
Well, there you go. That was the bit of the interview that we actually recorded, which...
I'm glad we didn't have to describe his entire life. Yeah, that would be a really disappointing episode.
Yeah, it was interesting though, wasn't it? Just hearing about his hitting the big time and going over to America, and it kind of working, but just not quite
what he wanted to do.
It's like a dream, isn't it? You know, I mean, you write something.
Yeah, and he could have stayed there and been successful and possibly broken through at some time, but he just kind of felt he wasn't. It was just it just kind of almost like it just became a job.
No longer a dream. He woke from the dream. It turned out to be not a dream.
Yeah, no, yeah, I thought it was interesting.
But very interesting.
So thank you very much, Adrian, for coming on. That was great.
Hey, chaps, you know what we should do on the back of that? We should...
Move to LA.
let's go now.
Yes, let's do it.
Cool.
Let's just go and just see if we can get a job.
Yeah.
No one does that, do they?
No, well, you could maybe become like a waitress or something, John.
Maybe to get by, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, why don't we
Or a waiter, even. I don't actually, you wouldn't actually need to change gender.
That's true.
I don't know why I said waitress.
Change gender. No, probably not.
Whatever you want.
Why don't we try to write...
I don't like this already.
...the treatment of a comedy series.
Okay.
Yeah.
We could do that. Because coming up on the podcast, at some point, I think we're going to rope my friend Rich into coming on the podcast.
What does Rich
do?
He
is a TV commissioner.
Oh, that makes sense.
And he could
then.
Even tell us, he could give us an idea as to whether our ideas are any good. We could just hit him with a load of amazing ideas. What do you reckon?
We could.
We could do that, couldn't we?
The more this podcast goes on, the more vulnerable and exposed I feel.
Yeah, but
we have to do?
Yeah.
We just keep putting ourselves out there for rejection, which I'm sure is entertaining for the listeners.
But we're doing it on behalf of other people, aren't we? Yeah, people are interested in the commissioning process. And we can take that rejection for them.
I think I'm still just smarting from the feedback from the 100-word microfiction contest. That's
Going
that hit me hard. That really did.
It's difficult to get over that, isn't it?
So what do you think? What do you think?
I think it's a terrible idea. Let's do it.
It is a good idea.
Go on.
Yeah it is a good idea. Fun.
So we put a pitch together. Then we pitch to the commissioning executive and we find out his opinions of our pitch live on the show.
Exactly.
All right, but until then, we should probably say goodbye.
See ya.
Talk to you about.
Bye. Oh my God, that's Jeff Goldblum over at the Watermelons.
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?
Yeah, we should point out that our endings are getting weirder and weirder for some reason, and Tom just cuts them off.
Do you know what it is? It's Dave doesn't know when to stop talking when he's saying goodbye.
Right,
he can't leave. He has.
Right,
he always has to get the last
just
the last
say goodbye.
Yeah.
Well, that's what a lot of the time, me and John have gone, bye, take care. And then you go. Then there's a little pause, and then Dave comes in going, bye then.
Goodbye,
have a nice day. Enjoy your lunch.
It's been really nice.
I don't want people to feel that, you know, talking. We're being abrupt.
And then John, bless him, feels the need to come in and join you. So you don't look silly talking about yourself.
Oh, now we're doing it again. I said goodbye about 5 minutes ago. Just stop.
Goodbye, everybody.
And then John will say goodbye. Yeah, this is how it happens.
Is this happening again? You're still talking.
Yeah.
Just stop talking.
Bye.
Bye. See, Dave always has to get the last
one. Have a nice day, everyone. Look after yourselves. Bye then. See ya.
How did you like it?